So as Pastor Lauren said, we're kicking off this lovely series that we're on called Lifelines, about this time after Easter when the tomb is empty, but life sometimes, Easter Monday rolls around. Now it's week two of Easter, right? And we still are confronted with challenges that sometimes bring us down, sometimes challenges that can make us feel like we're drowning or in a tomb. The tomb is most certainly empty, as I'll tell anybody who will listen, but sometimes it just feels like the tomb's full, that we've been buried too, that we're struggling with issues. So one of the things we thought about when reading these texts that come from between now and Pentecost, the early church is wondering, are we capable of doing this? Jesus has died, but Jesus has been resurrected. Some people are a little skeptical, which is fair. So do we have what it takes to be the church? So in Pentecost, we have the Holy Spirit, you know, birthday of the church. But in between, we think there is this really great bit of time where Jesus is encouraging and reminding his disciples, you have these tools, these resources, this blessing to be the people you are made to be. And that's where we got this idea of talking about lifelines. Lifelines that take us from times where we're questioning and bring us to courage and confidence. So the first lifeline that we're covering is, I think, perhaps one of the most obvious gifts I just talked about here, which is a community. God provides community in the midst of our struggles. And this gave me the great opportunity, and I have a captive audience, for me to talk about my dog, Marigold. I've been looking for this all day, man. I love talking about that pooch. It's my favorite. I like dogs. I don't know if you could tell. I've been called the Labrador myself because my tail's always wagging. I like to be outside. I like people. But this dog was great. We got her about 2 years ago, and it was after our two long-time dogs passed away. They were the same age, so it was like within a year we lost them both. Heartbroken. You know, a year later, Marigold comes up on one of these social media pet rescue sites, and I'm like, that's an adorable pooch. That's just begging for us to check her out. So we go check her out. She's 4 years old. We call her Mama Mary because she's had some babies. She's had a litter before. And we're loving this dog, but we heard the telltale warning sign. She's been in foster home for a while. She's been to a house or two and come back. And I'm like, ooh, piqued my curiosity. And what I realized was, Mary, let me just say, she puts on a really great show when she visits and like greets people for the first time. She's just loved everybody. The kids were able to it was lovely. We adopted her, and it was really within like 2 weeks, her breed started to reveal itself, which is she's a herd protection breed, which means she's used to like a job. I'm looking for people to be in charge of, things to protect. So the kids were like, hi, Mary. She's like, careful, you're coming too quick at me. All right, it's safe. Maybe you can get kind of close. You know what I mean? So she'd do these little growls and little things. She was a protection about her stuff, too. So if she had like a bone or anything like that, she'd be like, nobody comes near this. This is mine. As if we're chickens or something, you know, we're part of that herd that she's looking after. And we had to kind of establish who the people are, who her people are. Because for me, I'm the largest animal in the house. So I assume she thought I was the boss. She learned very quickly, like anybody, Emily is the boss. My wife is the boss. So she got the adults. But with the kids, we had to teach her over time that these are not herd livestock that she has to look after. They're actually people. And if you'd see her now, you'd be like, what a cuddle bug. She's like this big. She's like the size of a horse. I love her. She's not that big, but she's big to us. And she has found her home. She's comfortable. Now Harvey's cuddling her. She lays next to Amelia when she wants pets. She gets it. She still has her like, this is me time. I'm in charge here. But for the most part, what I think we've seen is this sort of like thawing, this sort of thing that happens when we realize we're with our people. When you realize you're with your community. When you realize you're with the people you do life with. You can be your whole self. Marigold stopped posturing. She got to lay upside down like a loaf, you know? And I think it's not so different from us. When we're around new people, I'm sure all of us don't just let our hair down right away, right? We have these fears. We have some little anxieties. We're a little guarded, a little more protected about what we're going to show to everyone because we don't know them, right? We don't know if they'll accept our whole self. Marigold became a loving creature, and we have that capacity as well when we are around our pack. We can be ourselves in true community. But community is our topic today because Thomas, I think this story particularly, has a really compelling story about community. You heard the story. You guys have heard this before, Doubting Thomas, right? Jesus shows up to the disciples. It's very dramatic. They're in a locked room. They're scared. Jesus has been executed. They're concerned. What are we going to do next? And I'm thinking about Marigold on her first few weeks in the house. What does this mean? And Jesus shows up. Shows up to the disciples in the flesh with his wounds and all and says, I'm with you. Peace be with you. Their fears are alleviated. Their anxieties about a future without him are now drifting away, fading away with the new reality of this unraveling story that Jesus is with us and Jesus has defeated death. What are we capable of? Can you imagine the courage and confidence that's coming from these people? So they're so rowdy about this that when they see the disciple Thomas, they're like, Thomas, guess what we saw? And he's like, huh. They're like, Jesus. And they go, Thomas, okay, let's be fair. He's called Doubting Thomas, but who here wouldn't doubt what was just being told to him? You know the guy who we saw die 3 days ago? He's back. And Thomas's like, no, I have never seen that before. And he rightfully says, unless I see it myself, you can't get me there. I can't be as excited as you are. So God does this great thing. Jesus shows up again. This time it says Thomas is with them. He appears before them. There's all this assurance and confidence, a reminder, though you see, you know, blessed are those who believe and don't see. A blessed story, a beautiful story of this fulfillment, of faith restored. Did Jesus appear to Thomas while he was by himself? He wasn't there. We don't know where Thomas was the first time, but he definitely wasn't there. He could have been preaching for all we know. But he wasn't there. Did Jesus then appear to Thomas while he was having a nice brisk walk through the trees? Nope. Didn't do that either. Didn't do it while Thomas was chatting with his mom and dad. Didn't appear until Thomas was back with his community. God reveals God's self. His whole self to Thomas, wounds and all, while Thomas is with his community. That's something we can really quickly overlook. Well, Thomas isn't there, so he wouldn't see. So now Thomas is here, so he does see. No, Thomas sees. Community isn't a tangential reality. Community is, I think, a big point. Stats are something that I've looked into because I think community is still perhaps one of the most vital things we have as a people. For those who know, you know, being in community is an absolute gift. It's a great gift to be in community, to be with people. And probably some of you know the simple off-the-cuff sort of things, like a person in community lives longer, right, than a person who lives by themselves. We know that. But I have here some statistics, some numbers, well, not numbers, but more comments and questions about this thing that's happening in our society right now, where we are probably in this really unique time post-pandemic, the rise of the digital community. We're spending less time together, right? Church attendance is dwindling, right? In church, I'm very biased. I work for one. used to be this great connector of people. And this report said, not spending time together has had this really great effect. They said, no time in U.S. history has there ever been a time where specifically young people have spent less time together. Young people, I don't know if you guys know this, the history is they generally congregate together. Youths. You know, you've seen it, the old man shaking. Right? The kids usually get together. They team up, they partner, they mingle, they spend time together. And it says nowadays, they don't as much. It's actually the lowest that's ever been recorded because kids communicate with each other. They talk with each other digitally, but spending physical time with each other, very limited. It's having an effect. Our kids have anxiety, these things like this. But another one is traditionally church being that sort of community connector. They said people who are not a part of religious communities are statistically also less civically engaged. So they're not involved in sort of the development of their community, the care of their community. Being unconnected to a religious community means you're less likely to volunteer, meaning be in your community in service, helping people who are in need. You're less likely then to feel less satisfied about your community. We're all critics. This doesn't work. I'm not going to do anything about it, but that doesn't work. Less understanding of that. Less likely to volunteer. They said the if you're not part of a religious community, you're less likely also to be satisfied with your social life. You're also less satisfied and more likely to feel, this is the big one, Pastor Lawrence talked about it, lonely. Community is not inconsequential. Community is huge. In fact, folks, we're made for it. We're not made to do this on our own. Which is exactly why in this Thomas story, I think Jesus shows up to Thomas when he's surrounded by the people he does life with. This is not some space where Thomas is bodiless or alone. This is a real place where he's surrounded by people who love him, people who respect him, people who care about him, that Jesus reveals Jesus' self. I wonder if it's so different here. I can tell you the countless times I've encountered Christ through the actions of the people I've witnessed, through their ways. I see an image of Jesus in their behavior. I always say this. You saw Maya the other day from Haiti. I was like, honestly, there are moments when he's caring for kids and stuff like that. I'm going, man, a glimpse of Jesus, right? When we do this, we get to see Jesus in a real way. Community is a literal lifesaver, according to so much evidence. And that's probably why, a big part of why CLM, which we're supporting right now during our resurrection project, the Shem and Levin Mio, the Pathway to a Better Life. At the heart of this story, which is a story of resurrection from ultra-poverty to sustainability and hope, is really about restoring community to these women. In the Central Plateau and the subsistence living, they are ultra-poverty. If we can sum it up, honestly, one fair way to sum it up is invisibility. Because you're so poor, people no longer see you or count you. The reason they don't is because you're so poor, you don't even have a home. You end up building a home on the outskirts of society. Ramshackle shack. And when you go out there to see these women, they can't even look you in the eye when they're being brought into this program because they're not used to looking at people because there's so much shame involved in seeing someone else that the shame spiral, the poverty spiral, has now made it even harder to connect with somebody, to connect with a lifeline of community and says, you are alone and invisible and you're doing this on your own. And that, folks, inevitably, tragically, has always ended in death. Invisible death, where you're no longer cared for, where the people have no concern that you're out there even. What CLM does is it provides this new abundant life for them that restores them to community. Yes, there's elements of how do we give them a commerce project or something that they can create like a living for themselves, that they can be a part of community. But really at the heart of all those technical things is bringing them back to community. There is no story of resurrection that doesn't involve the community. It seems very appropriate, I think. The Good Shepherd Lutheran Church would be a place that helps people restore community, encounter community, encounter more to this story because of the people that are connected here. You can be a part of a community of love. You can experience restoration. You can experience peace. It seems appropriate that a community modeled after the Good Shepherd would be able to say to people in Cincinnati, and as we see out there with the Taft Barrel, the Taft Board, we can say to kids in families connected to downtown Taft Elementary, we can say even to women in the Central Plateau of Haiti, we are with you. You are not alone. This is our mission. To be with, to be for. We are in this. You are in this too, with us, in the choppy waters of life, in the challenges that life throws at us. We are all in this together. Thanks be to God. But better than all of us being in this together, Christ is with us too. That's what the story reveals. When we are together, working for a glorious purpose of love, restoration, care, and wholeness, Christ is with us. Amen.